Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in today to listen to the 100th show of A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. I want to thank all my listeners and guests from the center of my heart, that's where love comes from, for bringing me to this exciting milestone. I started this show 3 years ago, April 21st, 2011, to be exact, with no broadcast or public speaking experience. I'm proud of the content of my earliest shows, but my delivery could have used some work. But what I've always had is the deepest desire to help ease others' journeys through life. I wish there'd been someone to help me navigate the hardest parts of mine. So I'm constantly learning and growing to progress myself so I can share what I learn with you. So I really want to thank all of you for supporting me and allowing me that privilege. Today we're going to be talking about your love relationships. You are going to learn what it takes for you to have enduring, fulfilling, loving relationships. You'll be surprised at how easy it is for you to create that in your life. Whether you and your partner have a promising foundation to build upon or not, let's be real. Not every relationship is meant to stand the test of time. Maybe you're listening to the show because you are at a crossroads in your relationship. Maybe you're trying to decide whether to work on your relationship or reconcile the fact that it's time to end it. Either way, today you will learn how to bring love to it. My special guest today, Bill Ferguson, is an expert who teaches others how to resolve the problem areas of their lives. His approach to life has been called the penicillin of psychology. Today we are fortunate to have Bill here to discuss his book, How to Heal a Painful Relationship, a national bestseller, and share his tried and true methods of how to do that. Bill Ferguson, author of 3 books and keynote speaker, has been featured on Oprah and recommended by the Wall Street Journal. As a former divorce attorney, 15% of Bill's clients never divorced, and the ones who did were able to part as friends. Now, with all that said, let's give a warm welcome to my special guest, Bill Ferguson. Hi, Bill. Thank you for being here with us today.
Well, hi there. I've been looking forward to it.
It's so wonderful to meet you.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm looking forward to this because it's just, for me, it's exciting talking about the nature of love because we look at life in a direction that just really messes everything up.
That's true. You know, I want you to explain something. You say you can be right or you can have love, but you can't have both. What do you mean by that?
Well, they're totally opposites because in order to be right, you have to make the other person wrong. And when you make the other person wrong, you destroy the experience of love. But when you had that experience of love, who cares who's right? See, you know, I used to be a divorce attorney, and the thing that I saw that on the surface was all the anger and the resentment and the upset and the bitterness and all the junk. And then always, always, always what was underneath all the upset was a tremendous amount of hurt. And always what was under the hurt was the love. We wouldn't be upset if we didn't care. So one thing became very obvious, and that is that love never, 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 never is love enough to have a relationship work. To have a relationship be great, you got to have the experience of love. So if I interact with you in a way where you feel loved, our relationship would be great. And if I interact with you in a way where you feel unloved, our relationship will be a disaster. So if I want my relationship with you to be great, it's always up to me. See, and
well, that's true.
You get your power in relationships.
Right. I mean, that's absolutely true. That makes so much sense. Once we start having conflicts with our partners, we really forget where, you know, the essence of the love that brought us together. So what is it that causes us to destroy these relationships?
Okay. Well, first, let's look at what creates love. Now, love is an inner experience. It's an inner state. And when you're in that experience of love, you're happy, you're alive, you're free, you feel good about yourself, you feel good about life, you're on top of life, you have a very positive attitude, you radiate that positive energy and great things happen around you. And ultimately, that's the natural state. That's who we are under all the junk. Okay, so if I want my relationship with you to be great, well, I need to make sure you feel loved. And what creates the experience of love is giving the gift of acceptance and appreciation. And acceptance is nothing more than being at peace with the truth. Because you're the way you are, whether I like it or not.
That's true.
See, there's the reality and there's our reality. In the reality, things just are. What so is what so, what happened is what happened, what is what is, period. That's the reality. Our reality consists of the thoughts, the feelings, the emotion, the opinions, the judgment, the stuff. So there's the truth, there's our stuff about it. When you can be at peace with the truth of the way things are, when you can be at peace with the truth of the way someone is, then automatically your focus goes towards, okay, given that's the truth, what do I need to do about it? And that's where life works. If you look at any relationship that isn't working, you look at any area of life that isn't working, notice the direction of focus. Instead of putting the focus on what do I need to do based on the facts, instead all the focus is on fighting the facts.
Right, that's true.
And
that's
what
true.
Happens in relationships, the number one biggest killer of relationships by far is not being at peace with the truth of the way that somebody is.
That's
you're
true. Now, if say we meet, you know, when we first meet somebody, are we all, you know, do we have to be okay with that truth initially in order for that to work? I mean, does that go away? Do we lose our tolerance for acceptance of the other person as time goes on?
Well, look at what creates the experience of love is giving the gift of acceptance and appreciation. So as I genuinely accept you for who you are, appreciate you for who you are, you feel empowered. You feel better about yourself. You feel better about life. Your walls of protection come down around me. And then as I genuinely accept and appreciate you, then you become more accepting and appreciative of me. And then I become more appreciative of you. You become more appreciative of me. And we create that cycle of loving, supporting, and empowering each other, which brings out the best in everybody. And that's the way most romantic relationships begin, but they don't stay that way. And the reason they don't stay that way is because it's just a matter of time until somebody's hurt from the past gets triggered. So you and I have a great relationship. No matter how wonderful you are, you're never going to be wonderful enough so as to not trigger my hurt.
Yeah, you said that there's two types of hurt. There's the hurt of the circumstances, and then there's the deeper childhood hurt where we feel worthless or not good enough or something else
and
is triggered.
That's what creates the problems. Because in relationships, you do what you do, strikes that nerve in me, and what that nerve is, it's that childhood hurt of feeling worthless, not good enough, not worth loving, that sort of thing. Because when we're born pure love, but we're born into a world that kills it. We experience very, very painful losses of love. And as a little child, the only way we can explain these incredibly painful losses of love is to blame ourselves. Clearly, I'm the problem. And then we decide what that problem is. I'm not good enough. I'm not worth loving. I'm worthless. I'm a failure. And it's never, never the truth, but in the eyes of a little child, it becomes our truth. And then we fight the very belief that we created, which then magnifies it out of proportion. And without realizing it, our whole life ends up being about running from that hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you get upset, why we get upset is because that nerve's been triggered, which is why different people get upset at different things, because each person has a different set of nerves that get triggered.
Right.
And what happens in relationships, you do what you do, okay, strikes a nerve in me, then I react negatively, which strikes a nerve in you, and then you strike the nerve in me, and I strike the nerve in you, and it's just back and forth like ping pong.
Oh, I mean, that makes so much sense. I think we can all relate to that. They say that, you know, well, not they say, but the truth is that a relationship works when it's a marriage of two whole people. So when people have those hurts, what do they do about it? I mean, do they just, do they have to learn to recognize it? Do they have to do the work on themselves before their relationship can work?
Well, you got to heal this hurt, you know, because see, I do a lot of individual work with people, and when I work with them, the first thing I do is look to see, well, what's the dynamic that's present in the relationship that's destroying the experience of love? Because the things that we think are the problem ultimately are never the problem. They're the symptom. There's always going to be some underlying condition that's creating the problem. The most common condition is the cycle of conflict. The cycle of conflict, you do what you do, strikes a nerve in me. Subconsciously, I'm threatened. I perceive you as a threat. Then I become non-accepting, judgmental, critical towards you, and that destroys love. So as I become non-accepting towards you, you get hurt, you get upset, then you become critical of me, and then I become more resentful towards you, you become more against me. And then we create that cycle of conflict, that cycle of hurting, attacking, and withdrawing from each other, and that's what kills relationships. So first step, you got to see what the condition is that's creating the problem, and most all the time, it's going to be this cycle of conflict. And then the next step is you got to find what the nerve is that's being triggered by the other person, and then heal that nerve.
Right.
And it's not difficult to heal it because the nerve is never based on fact. It's stuff that got made up as a little child and then magnified.
Right. But people have to be introspective to get to that point. Not everyone
Absolutely. See, and because normally what happens when we're in a relationship that isn't working, all the focus is on the other person. That's all we can see. All we can see is how the other person's treating us. We can't see our role in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about relationships are not 50-50. They're 100-100. You know, back when I was a divorce attorney, all I saw was my client. Very rarely did I ever see the other person. But when my client changed how he or she interacted with the other person, it changed how the other person responded in return. So what I discovered was that it only takes one person to heal a relationship.
That's true.
Only one person in that cycle of conflict. You may not be able to get the type of relationship you want. Like you may want to be married. I may want to be married to you. You may not want to have anything to do with me. We may already be married. I want to continue being married. You don't want to. So you may not get the type of relationship you want, but you can always have the love one human being to another, and it only takes one person.
That's just so cool. I mean, it's so simplistic, but yeah, it's really profound. So many people think that when they get into a relationship, the other person is supposed to make them happy. I think women tend to feel that more than men. And then when that other person doesn't make them happy, then they blame the other person. What is all that about? Why do we want others to make us happy?
Well, real bottom line, we don't like taking responsibility for our lives.
Right, that's true.
But so let's say you and I have a relationship, and you know it's never your job to make me happy. I need to get my happiness from within me and then from my life and then bring my happiness to the relationship. When I bring my happiness to the relationship, I empower it. When I try to get my happiness from the relationship, I disempower it. I drain it. You know, you made me happy before. Why aren't you doing it now? You see, it
right.
just sucks the love out of the relationship.
Right.
So it's never your job to make me happy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think... I've been married for 26 years, and I know the first couple of years it was, you know, we fought over stupid stuff, you know, and then we learned to just let stuff go, that it really wasn't that important. And, you know, and we learned to accept each other and, you know, on who we are. Of course, that, you know, from time to time we get on each other's nerves, but that's normal. But we do accept it and we let it go. You said that... We tend to fight the truth. So when we're upset, what we're really fighting is the truth. So can you explain that?
Yeah, because at any moment, what's so is always what's so. You know, what happened is what happened. You know, like pick an upset. Well, notice something happened, and notice how totally irrelevant our feelings are about it.
Right.
No matter how much you hate what happened, it doesn't change the truth. What happened still happened. See, when you can be at peace with the truth, what happened is what happened, then automatically the focus goes towards what do I need to do about it. In the workshops that I do, I give an example where, you know, my wife and I have this black and white cat. Well, that cat won't bark. And I can yell at the cat, and I can scream at the cat, and I can rationalize with the cat, but it doesn't make any difference because no matter what I do, that cat isn't going to bark. That's the truth. When I can surrender to the truth, and that doesn't mean I like the truth, but when I can surrender to the truth, then automatically my focus goes towards, okay, given that's the truth, what do I need to do about it? And if I want to hear barking, I go get a dog. That's where life works. Where life doesn't work is when our focus is on fighting the truth. When I'm fighting the truth of the cat doesn't bark, all my focus is going to be on that doggone cat. I'm going to be convinced that the cat is the problem, but the cat is not the problem. The cat's just the cat. The problem is my fighting it. And in my fighting that cat for not barking, I destroy my ability to find solutions because I'm focusing in a direction that's exactly opposite of where the solutions are. So instead of focusing on what do I need to do, the focus is on resisting. And in my resisting, I magnify the problem. And now, not only does the cat not bark, but it's starting to bite. And that same dynamic happens in every single area of life, in relationships and every area of life. Every area of life that isn't working is an area where we're fighting the truth. And in our fighting the truth, we destroy our ability to see what needs to be done because we're not looking in that direction. And we interact in a way that literally magnifies the problem. So it's all about being able to flow with life. And
right. Isn't everything about being able to flow with life? Really, that's the key to happy life.
You're very effective. Yes, I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, I said that's really the key to everything in life, is to be able
it
to
really
flow
is.
Because relationships are just a microcosm of everything else.
Absolutely.
They're very
absolutely.
Important, but they are, right, we have to learn to flow with everything. People tend to get resentments, and they hold them against other people. And they really believe the other person has done something to them.
Yes.
What causes resentment?
Okay, all anger, resentment, and blaming. Anger, resentment, and blaming are all defense mechanisms. They're deflections. They're a forceful pointing outside of us. That's the problem over there, over there, over there, not me. Anger, resentment, and blaming are defense mechanisms to put the focus on the other person or that circumstance so we don't have to look at ourselves. And why we don't want to look at ourselves is we don't want to feel the hurt. We don't want to look to see that down deep we're the problem, namely that we're worthless, not good enough, not worth loving, that sort of thing, which is never the truth. It's just a suppressed emotion. But in an automatic attempt to avoid that emotion, then we blame, we have anger, resentment. And like in anger, anger is always, always, always pure avoided hurt. The moment you can go to the hurt and feel it willingly like a child, the need for the defense mechanism disappears in an instant. The anger disappears in an instant. And then you get your peace back. And then when you get your peace back, you become 1,000 times more effective.
Yes. So true. So true. When pain is buried so deeply, it's not always that easy to access it. So if someone identifies that they have anger, is it a good idea that they get some help working through things?
Well, there's some real simple things that I can talk about that would be real helpful. For one thing, on the surface, we resist certain circumstances. But at a deeper level, we never resist the circumstances. We resist the emotion.
Hmm.
See, so you and I have a relationship, you announce you're leaving, boom, there's this explosion of emotion in me. So it's that emotion we don't want to feel.
Right.
But we misidentify the threat. The threat is the emotion, but we misidentify it. We think the threat is the circumstance. But the circumstance never is the problem. Ultimately,
right.
It's the symptom.
Right, so it's a matter of awareness. It is really just
yes.
a matter of awareness
and
analyzing what goes on.
That, it's the willingness to feel the hurt.
Right,
one
that's
of the
true.
Most important qualities in a relationship and one of the most important qualities in life is the willingness to feel the hurt. Because when you're willing to feel your hurt, you know, a circumstance comes along and it triggers an emotion that you're willing to feel, that circumstance will have no power over you.
Hmm.
But if a circumstance comes along and triggers an emotion that you're unwilling to feel, that circumstance is going to have total power over you.
In Chapter 10, which is the title, is
hurt.
Accept Your 100% Responsibility, you talk about once you blame somebody, you're giving that person your power. You put that person,
yes.
You say you put that person at cause and you put yourself at effect.
Yes. Well, let me say one thing more about the hurt, because this is like a real key ingredient in releasing the emotion.
Okay.
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 So whenever we get upset, look at emotion. When we get upset, there's all sorts of chemical reactions that happen inside of us. These chemical reactions create a very negative energy. This negative energy needs to get purged. It needs to get purged from our body. Because if this negative energy does not get purged, it turns into suppressed emotion. Suppressed emotion is incredibly destructive. Anything that triggers the suppressed emotion will be a threat, which forces us to act destructively, which will cause us to act in a way that will cause the suppressed emotion to grow and grow and grow. So whatever your suppressed emotion is, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger as you go through life. Also, there's a direct link between suppressed emotion and very serious physical problems. So the body knows this. The body just automatically wants to purge itself of this negative energy, of this suppressed emotion. And it happens most often in upset. Every time we get upset, ultimately what's happening is this suppressed emotion is being brought to the surface to be purged. That's what's happening in an upset. But in our culture, we don't notice it. All we notice are the circumstances.
True.
So the opportunity is to grab into that emotion and pull it out. But, you know, to feel it deliberately like a child. But our culture teaches us to suppress our emotion, which is the worst thing you can do. See, there's two different ways to feel the hurt. One has the hurt come and go quickly. The other one turns it into pain and causes it to stay. You can either feel the hurt willingly like a child or unwillingly. You can feel it as a victim of the circumstance, or you can feel it because you choose to, because you want to reach in and grab it and pull it out. When you feel the hurt, and most of the time when we feel the hurt, we feel it as a victim of the circumstance. And when you do that, a person can cry hours a day for months and have no healing. But if you take the exact same hurt and feel it willingly like a child, deliberately, purposely, because you choose to, because you want to reach in and grab it and pull it out, you can have a major healing in moments. So whenever you get upset, in that state of upset, you're very destructive. So whenever you get upset or you have a difficult time, top priority is to get that junk out of you, get your peace back, because when you get your peace back, that's when you have your effectiveness.
Right. That makes, it makes so much sense. It's so logical, Bill.
Another thing is like if I'm willing to feel my hurt, then that makes it safe for me to be vulnerable around you. I can let my walls down around you. I can be human around you. And then that makes it safe for you to be vulnerable around me. And when your walls are down and my walls are down, the love in me connects with the love in you, and then you have something really beautiful. But if I'm not willing to feel my hurt, I'm going to keep my walls up. When my walls are up, it's not going to be safe for you to keep your walls down, so your walls are going to go up. And when your walls are up and my walls are up, at the very best, our relationship will be superficial.
Right.
And more likely destructive. So the willingness to be vulnerable is one of the keys to a truly great relationship, but that isn't going to happen unless you're willing to feel your hurt.
Right. And when one partner decides to, allows that hurt to be felt, does the other partner tend to do the same?
Yes, because every time you interact with somebody, you're either going to create love or you're going to destroy love, every single time. And whatever you give is going to come right back. And that willingness to be human, that willingness to be vulnerable, that creates love. And so does, accepting somebody and appreciating somebody creates love. And as you give love, it always comes back. And some people, it comes back faster than others, but it always comes back. So literally, every time you interact with somebody, you're going to either create love or you're going to destroy love. And whatever you give is going to come right back. So you want to go through life giving love. And giving love, it's just a state of mind. And it doesn't mean lay on the railroad tracks and let somebody roll over you. You say no when it's appropriate to say no. You do whatever you need to do, but you just come from that place of love. It is very, very powerful.
I understand what you're saying. I think that if someone is listening to this show and they're in the middle of a divorce or a separation or something like that, and they're thinking to themselves, how can I love that SOB? What do you say to them?
Yes. Well, all the upset is pure avoided hurt. Oh, and also another thing, what creates love is giving acceptance. Well, pick somebody in your life that's very difficult to accept. Well, notice that person's the way that person is. That person's the cat that doesn't bark. Acceptance is nothing more than surrendering to the truth. And accepting somebody the way they are doesn't mean you have to live with them. It doesn't mean you have to hang out with them. You can let somebody be exactly the way they are and honor them as a human being and let them be that way somewhere else. See, when you can surrender to the truth, you can see the truth. And when you can see the truth, you can see what you need to do based on what the truth is. When we fight the truth, we can't even see the truth because it's not about doing what works. It's all about avoiding emotion. When you can be at peace with the truth, then your decisions and your actions are based on facts. When you're in that state of resisting and upset, the decisions and actions are not based on facts. They're based on emotion.
Right.
And they're guaranteed to make things worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if somebody is in that situation, the key is acceptance,
well,
realizing that the person is the way they are.
Yes. Yes. And it's surrendering to the truth of the way they are and then looking to see what you need to do, which brings up the whole conversation about letting go. See, letting go is an inner state. It's a state of mind. Letting go removes the fear, upset, and tunnel vision so that we can see what actions we need to take. So let's say,
right,
like you and I have a relationship and you announce you want to leave. Well, on the surface, I'm resisting your leaving. But at a deeper level, I'm not resisting your leaving. I'm resisting all the feelings and emotion that get triggered if I even think about your leaving. It triggers all that hurt of the down deep, I'm really worthless, not worth loving, not good enough, that sort of thing. And subconsciously, if that's the truth, I might as well die. So the threat is the emotion, but I misidentify the threat. I think the threat is the circumstance called you're wanting to leave. So since I don't want to die subconsciously, I can't let you leave. You need to stay. So I'm going to have this tunnel vision where all my focus is on how do I make you stay. And then in that tunnel vision, I destroy my ability to see what I need to do, and all of my actions are going to be counterproductive. I'm going to hang on to you. I'm going to threaten you. I'm going to grovel. But instead of creating an environment where you're going to want to be with me, I'm creating an environment that's going to push you away. Instead of creating an environment where you want to be with me, you're going to want to get away from me as fast as you possibly can. So every area of life that doesn't work, every relationship that doesn't work, there's this underlying tunnel vision that's destroying our effectiveness and creating the problem. So if I want to save my relationship with you, I got to let go of the tunnel vision. To let go of the tunnel vision, I got to get rid of the fear that creates it. A fear is an inner state, and a fear is created by resisting a future event. So if I have a fear of losing you, I'm resisting that future event called losing you. The more I resist losing you, the bigger my fear. The bigger my fear, the more I hang on. The more I hang on, the more I push you away, which brings to me my fear. So whatever you fear, you're going to interact in a way that will tend to bring to you the very thing you fear. So to get rid of the tunnel vision, I got to get rid of the fear. To get rid of the fear, I've got to do the opposite of what creates it. Instead of resisting the future event, I've got to be willing for the event to come true, to be willing to lose you, not in my actions, but in my heart. In my actions, I'm going to do everything I can to save my relationship with you, but in my heart, if you go, you go, I'll deal with it.
I like the affirmation that you had in your book. You say, tell God or the universe, I give you full permission to take this away forever. I want it to stay, but I can let it go. And then you say it over and over until you really mean it and believe it, and you allow the hurt that you feel while you repeat the words. I think that's really great.
Yeah, and letting go, it's one of the most important tools a person can have in life, because letting go restores your it removes the fear, upset, the resisting, the hanging on, the destructive behavior, and it allows you to see what you need to do.
Right.
And letting go, again, is strictly a state of mind, and it is totally separate from your actions. Letting go is what allows you to see what the action is you need to take. And it's just so, so, so important.
It is important.
So you're talking about having somebody that's in a painful relationship. Well, you've got to be willing to lose the person, and you got to be willing for the cat to never bark. Not in your actions, but in your heart.
That's right.
And in the letting go of the resisting restores your ability to see clearly. And in that ability to see clearly, solutions, opportunity, and possibility show up. Because when you're resisting, you're looking in a direction where the solutions and opportunity don't exist.
Right.
You let go of the resisting, and then you start seeing what you need to do.
What about, how do people talk about compromise and sacrifice in relationships? Do they apply? Should we compromise and sacrifice in our relationships?
Well, the key is looking for solutions that work for everybody. There's a whole bunch of different ways to answer that question.
Okay.
One thing that's so powerful in relationships is surrender. I used to have a relationship years ago where this lady, she was just genuinely interested in my being happy. So she wanted to have my will be done. Well, out of that, I felt so empowered, I wanted her will to always be done. And then she was more empowered and wanted my will to be done, and I wanted her will to be done. So it was impossible to have a disagreement. Because we so much wanted the other person to be happy, and it was genuine. You know, it wasn't like out of a codependency or something. It was just a genuine desire.
That's beautiful.
So the more you have surrender, compromise doesn't even exist. I mean, there's no need for it. Another thing is that the key to resolving disputes is to look for solutions that work for everybody. And compromise doesn't necessarily have to be a part of it. I'll give you a great example. I'm married now, and there was a point when we purchased a new home, and then we decided to totally redo all of our furniture. We started totally redoing the entire house. And then real soon we started noticing that there were things that she wanted and there were things that I wanted, and they were opposite. If we'd compromised, then we would have gotten the sofa that I wanted that she couldn't stand, and we would have gotten the rug that she wanted that I couldn't stand, and then we'd walk into the living room and both of us would gag. But what we decided to do is that we weren't going to buy anything unless both of us loved it.
Okay.
And it took a whole lot longer to get everything. But now, no matter what room we're in the house, both of us love it. There was no compromise.
Right. Great illustration, Bill. That really makes it very clear.
Yeah, because the commitment was to find solutions that worked for both of us. See,
right.
And the thing that I found, particularly in negotiating and the work I did as a divorce attorney, was that when you look for solutions that work for everybody, you'll be amazed at how fast you can find them. But in relationships, we don't do that. What we do is, like, you and I have a disagreement, then I draw sides against you, and then I fight to have my side win, which then forces you to make sure that doesn't happen, so that forces you to fight me, which then I have to fight you more, and you have to fight me more.
Right.
And it just, in this cycle of conflict, escalates dramatically. And that all comes out of drawing sides. So you do not want to draw sides.
Right.
Always keep the focus on how can we find solutions that work for everybody.
Right. That's just such great advice. I love it. We're running out of time. Can you just say really briefly, like, if when you bring your conflict to an attorney and all they want to do is make money, is that a good thing? I mean, what do we look? What kind of attorney should we go to when we, if we have these conflicts that we really think we need to end?
Well, as much as you can, you want to stay out of the legal system, and you want to resolve all the disputes on your own. You want to use attorneys as advisors, not as adversaries.
Okay.
Because when the attorneys start becoming gladiators with each other, it's like you lose control of the whole divorce. So as much as you can, you want to work everything out on your own.
Okay.
And it's helpful to look for attorneys that would tend to be more peacemakers. You know, attorneys that are interested in mediation. You want to avoid gladiator attorneys.
Okay.
If
you have
a gladiator attorney, then he bombs Pearl Harbor, and then the other person attacks back, and then we wonder why.
Right. It gets very ugly.
Yeah,
we are getting so close to the end of the show, and there's so much we could talk about. But what I want to do is I want to give you an opportunity to tell my listeners how they can get in touch with you or your website or whatever you want to tell us. Just take about a minute or two and just like fill us in on how we can reach you.
Well, great. There's a website I have, masteryoflife.com. And that's got a lot of great articles and videos on it. And, you know, so go there. Also, I do individual work with people. We've got workshops, seminars, and there's a number of books that I've written. The How to Heal a Painful Relationship, which is about how do you end the cycle of conflict and heal the relationship one human being to another. And that book, How to Heal a Painful Relationship, that was the book that I was on Oprah for. And it's just, you know, a real powerful book. And there's and then on the website, there's other books that I've written, too, and the bookstore lists them all. But the main thing is that it is possible to create a life more wonderful than anything you can imagine. Relationships can heal. The problem areas of life can clear up. You can create a great life, but it takes looking at life in a very different way. And it takes healing, and it takes specific action. There's a step-by-step process for having life work, but you got to know what the steps are.
Right.
So,
and this is very helpful. And I did read your book, How to Heal a Painful Relationship, and it's very good.
Okay.
I mean, I've been citing things from the book that I highlighted. So I found it to be very, very helpful. I'm going to have to say thank you and goodbye, Bill, even though I don't want to. But this has been really, really great. And I do thank you so much for coming on and being my guest.
Well, thank you. And I've so much enjoyed being with you and doing this with you. So just, you know, thank you very, very much for inviting me. And congratulations.
Oh, you are so welcome. Okay, well, have a wonderful day. And I'll be in touch.
Great. Well, bye.
Thank you. So we are out of time, but if you have any comments about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. Randy is always spelled RANDIGFINE.com, loveyourlife.com. And my website is randygfine.com. It's pretty easy to find me. Everything is Randy G. Fine something. If you enjoy listening to my shows, please become a show follower. More followers will get this show more recognition. Visit my blog at randygfine.com for even more inspiration. I'm always writing articles and posting articles about ways that we can improve our lives. And you can join the list of devoted followers there. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author Randy Fine signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randy.com.